Welcome to this exciting and timely teleclass from Cisco and the Conference for Women. My name is Kelly Kerwin, and I'm a senior manager in the Americas Services Organization at Cisco Systems. Cisco is the global leader in connecting anyone, anywhere, on any device at any time. The Conference for Women shares our belief that connections drive our businesses and our lives forward. We're pleased to present today's teleclass on the topic of effective networking, featuring speaker, author, and television commentator Laura Schwartz. Laura's most recent book, Eat, Drink, and Succeed, shares practical advice on how to use networking to grow your business. If you're planning to attend the Conference for Women, we hope you'll visit us in the Cisco Networking Lounge located in the Expo Hall. We will provide comfortable couches and tables, a relaxed space for conversations with new and existing contacts, portable device chargers, interactive classes focused on improving your LinkedIn profile, and access to Cisco representatives who can answer questions about products, services, and incredible career opportunities. Thank you all for joining us today, and I'm pleased to introduce Laura Schwartz.
Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Successful Networking at the Conference and Beyond. Our guest today is Laura Schwartz, author of Eat, Drink, and Succeed, Climb Your Way to the Top Using the Networking Power of Social Events. Every social and planned interaction is an opportunity for career development. Based on this philosophy and on her book, Eat, Drink, and Succeed, Laura will teach conference attendees strategies to use to build partnerships and excel both during and in between conference events. Whether you're approaching registration, attending a class, walking the exhibit hall, or socializing, Laura will help you take every facet of the conference and make it work to your full advantage. Laura provides the tools, tips, and techniques that motivate attendees to capitalize on all social and business interactions at the conference so that you can turn relationships into partnerships and ideas into realities. We'll be sharing highlights from today's call on Twitter. You can follow along and join the conversation at Penn Women, at Texas Women, and at Mass Women. And you can find Laura Schwartz at Laura Schwartz, that's Schwartz with a T. Laura Schwartz, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you, Karen. It is such an honor to be here and to see what is ahead at all these conferences for women around the country. It's great to be a part of this because of the incredible empowerment that the Conferences for Women is. I believe an important way we empower each other is indeed through partnerships. And, you know, many of them are made around a table, and that table is not always in the boardroom. It can be in the dining room, it can be a power lunch, or it can be a snack on the soccer game field over the weekends. It's all about the networking power of social events, of which the tools apply to our offices, our communities, our neighborhoods, our homes. They're all translatable, and I truly believe that a powerful guest, for example, is one that gets more out of any event than just the free food and drink. It is the guest that is able to eat, drink, and succeed that is most powerful. And we all have that opportunity at the Conferences for Women and in our everyday. You know, over my 8 years behind the scenes at the White House during the Clinton administration as the director of events, I got to let you know, I saw a lot of people come, and they ate, and they drank, and they left with the White House towels stuffed in their pockets. But then I saw others come, others that came, and they ate, and they drank, and they met people that they were able to form relationships and take that into partnerships. They had ideas that they indeed were able to turn into reality. And never was that so apparent than the 94th state dinner of Boris Yeltsin. You see, it's always interesting with the guest list for a state dinner because you've got the dignitaries themselves, the delegations from the visiting country as well as America, politicos and administration officials, great philanthropists, entrepreneurs. And at this one particular dinner in 1994, one of the guests was Steven Spielberg. And he arrived in black tie, his wife, Kate Capshaw, a beautiful gown, and they were in cocktails having great conversation with a lot of the different attendees from all walks of life all around the world. And they started talking to these two other guys and got on real well, had a great time, continued the conversation after dinner. And here they were in the grand foyer during dancing, kind of huddled in the corner talking with each other. Well, these two other guys just happened to be David Geffen and Jeffrey Katzenberg. And 13 days later, they announced DreamWorks. You know, Mr. Spielberg talks about it in his book, and he says, you know, here we were, you know, three schmucks from Hollywood standing 6 feet away from Clinton and Yeltsin, who are probably talking, you know, nuclear proliferation, and we're thinking, hey, would it be great to make a movie studio? And they did. And that idea, those negotiations weren't at a studio lot in Hollywood. They weren't even in a boardroom, but they were at the White House at a state dinner in Washington. But, of course, we don't all go to state dinners. But we obviously, as we are attending soon, the Conference for Women. At conferences, we have just incredible opportunities all around us. And it was a few years ago at a media conference that now Senator, then Mayor Cory Booker of Newark, New Jersey, was at a conference just like the rest of us, you know, attending educational sessions, going to the luncheons, you know, checking emails during breaks. And that evening there was a dinner. And, you know, many of us could say, you know, I just want to have that remote control to myself. I'm going back to the room. I've got to catch up on my emails. I got to check my voicemails. I am just going to try to get caught up on work tonight. I'm going to skip that social function. You know what? That happy hour they're having tonight, that dinner, that I'm skipping that and getting some work done. Well, he took the initiative to go down to that dinner. He arrived and had a seat at the table ready for him, and he took a seat. And there he was, surrounded by nine other individuals from all different kinds of industries around the country, and they had conversation. And through the course of conversation, just like the conferences for women allow us, they were able to share their challenges, look for solutions, and celebrate their success, which I believe is the trifecta of any conference or event. And that can be the Conference for Women. It can be a conversation in your home. It can be at a power lunch. But this is the opportunity to do just that. Share your challenges. Don't think that makes you look weak, because that's how we learn. And then search for solutions with those around you and celebrate that success. And that's what Mayor Cory Booker back then did at that table. Well, they had great conversation throughout the evening. Afterwards, they exchanged business cards, and he met that night and happened to be sat next to a guy named Mark Zuckerberg. Well, they got on real well. 2 months go by, and all of a sudden, Mark Zuckerberg got wind about this movie, The Social Network. I knew it didn't depict him in a great light, and he was looking to do something. And he didn't think back to a meeting or correspondence. But he thought back to that dinner when he met that mayor of Newark, New Jersey, who talked about the challenges the public school system was going through. And he thought to himself, you know what, that was a sharp man. That was an interesting issue. That's what I'm going to do. And he gave $100 million to the Newark Public School District. Thank goodness Mayor Booker had the foresight to attend that dinner. Mark Zuckerberg, I'm sure, had Facebook messages to get back to. He went to that dinner. Something we might think is just it's an optional event, but it's not. It is an opportunity. And even when we're not at conferences, Oprah Winfrey, for example, was out on a date with a wonderful man, God rest his soul, Roger Ebert, at a Hamburger Hamlet joint, a burger joint in Chicago. They were on a date, and it's on that date when she said, Roger, can I ask you a question? And she had a dilemma facing her because she had a possible deal with ABC, and she also had one that came across from King World. She really wasn't sure which way she would go, so she talked about it with Roger on that date. They made calculations on a napkin, and he slid that napkin over to her after that conversation. She looked at it, and she said, I'm going with King World. You know, she made the most professional decision of her entire life on a date. And has affected others through that. So it just shows us that we can be anywhere in black tie, in no tie, and make that conversation happen. That could change our life, or it could very well change someone else's life. And for me, that truly is the positive power of networking. And when we look at networking, you know, sometimes I'd even put in the title of the book, the main title, because it can have a bit of a manipulative, connotation to it all. You know, it can make us feel a bit like, you know, somebody's just trying to get something from you, or they're going to work the room, and you feel like they're working you. But when we look at networking in a positive way, we find out that networking is all about what I can do for you, an approach that asks ourselves, what do they need that I can give them? What kind of bridge in my life do I have that I can offer them to get across to lead them to where they're meant to go, where they want to go, whether that be professionally or personally? And it's something that I think, you know, in looking back in history, and we look at the great speeches, and I love the history of our country, and a great speech we're all familiar is with President Kennedy's inauguration speech. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it lives in every conversation we have in our lives, in our homes, at work, after work, at a charity event, at an activity on the weekend, to look to somebody and say, what can I do for you? And we find that out through conversation. And we find that out through productive conversations when we have focus. And focus is incredibly important. It goes hand in hand with the positive definition of networking so that we can make the most out of every conversation. But it's tough to do. There are so many things going on in life at any one given time, from the picking up and dropping off, sickness, illness, political strife, struggles around the world that impact us here at home, in our homes, that we really need to concentrate on being present. Well, I learned about focus from President Clinton, and I'll never forget it. It was my first event in the East Room as the director of events, and it was a bill signing, and everything was in place in the East Room. The chairs were set. The table was up on the stage for the bill signing itself. The big podium, the presidential podium, was there in front of the gold curtain of that magnificent East Room. There were risers in the back for the press. The Marine Band, the president's own, was in the grand foyer to play entrance music, and later on the ruffles and flourishes from the Herald trumpets would start. So I looked around, and everything was in place, and I knew there were some guests getting together at the East Gate, so I said, go ahead, open the gate, we're all ready to go. Guests start coming up, the music's playing, they take their seats. I found the participants that would be on stage with the president. I walked them through the program, introduced them to each other, and then I took them over to the Blue Room. That's just off the cross hall on the state floor, down the hall from the East Room. There they could relax, get to know each other, and then once the president arrived, we would do the briefing once again and begin the event. So sure enough, the room's filling up, looking good. We're getting close to on time for the event. So I go ahead and I say, all right, let's bring the press up. Press comes up. They file in the back. They're ready to go. The guests are seated. They're ready to go. I ask the colonel of the Marine Band to bring up the herald trumpets for the ruffles and flourishes, the grand announce into the East Room. They're in place in the grand foyer. The one problem I had was that there was no president. And that's because the president was notorious for being late. In fact, we called it CST, Clinton Standard Time, which was late. And still today, they call it CST. But I got to tell you, once he finally arrived, I briefed him, brought him into the Blue Room, introduced him to the guests. But before I cued the colonel of the Marine Band, because, man, once you cue ruffles and flourishes, you know, there's no going back. So I looked at the president one last time, and I just said, sir, are you ready? Yes. And he looked at me, and he said, Laura, it's showtime. And I thought, showtime? You know, what is this showtime? You know, this is not a show. This is an event. I've worked very hard on this event. But I thought, you know what, better to have your boss in a good mood than not, right?
Absolutely.
The event goes off, and it goes very well, very happy with it. And afterwards, later that afternoon, there's just a small event happening over in the West Wing in the cabinet room, sort of like the boardroom of the White House. And it's just off the assistant's office outside of the Oval Office, right there in the same little corridor. And we were briefing the president of the Oval about this small event in the cabinet room, but there were going to be a couple of cameras there. Well, we walked out of the Oval Office through the assistant's office into that side door. But before I opened it for him to walk in, I simply said, very casually, "Mr. President, are you good to go?" And he looked at me, and just in that casual voice, he said, "Laura, it's showtime." And there it was again, that showtime. And then I realized that he wasn't saying it to be funny. He wasn't being flippant about it. It was his way to get into focus. Because the reason he was always late wasn't because he was lazy. It's because when I was in the East Room getting ready for the event and we were ready to go, he was wrapping up a briefing on national security. And on his way walking over to the residence down the West Colonnade, he gets pulled aside because there's a vote going up on Capitol Hill. He's got to make a few calls. Or I could start briefing him, and all of a sudden there's a head of state on the phone, and you know, you got to take those calls. The president, just like every one of us, is a multitasker. And by saying it's showtime was his way to get into focus, to effectively communicate that message for the next 20 minutes, that next hour, or that next 3 hours. By not forgetting about everything else that's going on, but just putting it to the side for that moment to be focused on the message and the moment at hand. And I realized, you know, I could put some of that showtime to work in my own life. The next day we had another event similar to the Eastern, but in the Rose Garden. But this day, after everything was set, before I queued the gates to open over at the East Wing, I said to myself, "Laura, it's showtime." And you know what? That was my moment to take my details from my office, the messages that I needed to answer, and the voicemail that was full, the event the next day, the steak dinner the next week. And instead of thinking about all of that, I just put it to the side for that hour. And even though that event the day before I thought went really well, this was better. I learned more from it. I gave more to it. And it really taught me that this showtime, this focus philosophy could work in my personal life as well. I used to walk into my cousin's birthday parties or holiday celebrations back in Wisconsin while I was living in D.C. I'd be back just for a couple of days, and I'd go to see the family. And I had that phone right next to me. I'd check that phone. I'd check it just out of habit. And you know what? Whenever I checked the phone, I checked out of conversation. And I would go home that night thinking, oh, wait, what's going on with this nephew or what's going on with this cousin? And I realized I need to put some of that showtime into my life. And that's what I did. I'd check that phone, and I would put it in my coat, and I'd hang it up. I'd sit down at that table, and boy, I was present. I heard conversation. I lent to conversation. I was a part of conversation. And I felt great after I left. So I realized that showtime effectively means that we must be present. And how many times we've gotten those raffle tickets where on the back of it says you must be present to win? I remember growing up all the time as a kid at the church auction or at a Ducks Unlimited function, you get the raffle ticket, must be present to win. And that's true, because we must be present to win, whether that's at the table with our children, in the workplace, amidst a challenge, in the community. We must be present to win. And whenever we walk into any situation, if we can be in focus and we can say, it's showtime, and take everything else that's happening and not forget about it, but just put it to the side for that meeting, that encounter, that 15 minutes. Those 15 minutes could be the 15 minutes that will change our life or change somebody else's. But we can't just walk into a room. We can't just say, you know, cross that threshold at the conference center and say, it's showtime, and expect a, you know, five-star event, and that we will, in fact, eat, drink, and succeed. We got to work towards it. We got to work towards it just like an actor has to before they walk out on stage for the first time. You know, a couple of tips to leave you with from setting the scene. Just like an actor has got to get a feel for the scene and what's going on in that scene and how it all relates to each other, we are able to do the same thing in our life. Because, for example, our scenes aren't limited just to the office and our home. Our social scenes, which are the areas of which we're active, we have to think about who's active in them with us. What do they do? Where are they from? Where do they want to go? And all of a sudden, we see these bridges that connect our scenes and that can connect other people to what they need in life. Because I truly believe that it's as we help others, we achieve ourselves. And maybe that's seen as our inner circle, of which we've got a few good friends or family that we know we can count on, that we know have connections to other areas that we need to tap into for somebody else or ourselves. The scene that centers around our children and their parents, of their friends, and the different committees you sit on at the school next to someone you otherwise never would have met before in your life. Same thing in our neighborhood and service organizations, where people from all different sectors come together because of a passion and a mission for a cause. Charity, nonprofit, professional organizations within the industry, clubs and leagues, there are many opportunities that we have if we sit down and do a bit of a social diagram of where we are involved and then who's involved in there with us. Where do they go to school? What do they do? And all of a sudden, we start seeing that at every age, we have a powerful social scene. As long as we define it, we can tap into it. And that makes a great difference in our lives and the lives of others. And then just like an actor, you want to, have a casting call. You want to look for the right event. And by the way, this is where I always like to stress. You know, we look, and as I said, Mayor Cory Booker could have seen that conference dinner as optional. But he saw it as an opportunity. And once we look at things not as optional, but as opportunities, then we create the moments that will change a life, including ours. If you look at the incredible agenda for the conferences for women, you know, it's listed as the agenda at a glance. I personally believe it is opportunities at a glance, from that registration where you can go up, and when you're a party of one, sometimes it can be difficult. Maybe we don't have the confidence. Maybe we're just not that social butterfly, and that is okay. You do not have to be a social butterfly to really connect to the power of networking. And so you can walk up and meet somebody at registration. Go sit in the opening keynote next to someone you've never met before, even if you've gone there with friends. Same thing for all the rest of the sessions, the luncheon, the book signings. Really going to that career pavilion, not because you're just going to drop by to see what it's all about, but you're going to go and you're going to be involved. Same thing in that exhibit hall all day. The conversations are all around you. The opportunities are right there for you. And the opportunity can start before you even go. Now, I like talking about dress rehearsal. I love getting ready for events. Sometimes you put on some makeup or you change clothes or maybe you take your makeup off and you put your shorts and a T-shirt on to go for a run with a running group. Whatever it may be, we can get ready in a way of which starts with research. You know, the neat thing is, the speakers that are going to be at the conferences and other organizations that are sponsors and other people in your community that are going to be there. Well, hey, check out their Twitter feed and see what's trending. Take a look at their Facebook and see what they post about. Is it flowers? Are they a real, do they just love flowers? Do they post up about an organization they're very involved in? What are their kids' sporting activities? What is it? Same thing with LinkedIn to find their professional background. We can make a connection before that conversation, and that connection is what's going to solidify that conversation. But I always stress there's a fine line between networking and stalking. And so, you're looking at this for just good event, good information on, where you have a connection that exists that you know of that you can organically discuss. Same thing with the power of knowledge. Hey, before you go, instead of always just listening, and I love sitcoms, I love that Seinfeld is on at any time of day and any time zone around the world in many languages. But you know what? It's much better if I'm listening to the news behind me so that when I get somewhere and have a conversation, I can be the one that breaks news and not just reacts to the news. And you know what? Instead of relying on the weather to open a conversation, hey, take a look and Google the location you're going to. Find out something interesting or historic or fascinating about it so that you can start a conversation about this incredible place that you happen to be instead of, hey, it's really hot out there. You know, you're able to, at that point, empower people with great information that, hey, they're going to reuse in conversations all day. It shoots your credibility up right away and is a foundation for a conversation. You know, have that business card with you, and you want to keep these things current and accessible. Make sure they're not in the car, but they're in your purse. There's a purse out there right now that has a little business card holder on the outside of it. It's convenient. It's easy. And, hey, these things are not expensive. Make sure your office keeps them up to date. Or if you're an entrepreneur yourself, there are some great resources out there where they are next to nothing because you want to hand somebody yourself. Because after you're done with that event, no matter what it may be, you know, on the weekends or at work or in the evenings, you know, that's what that person's going to have on their desk the next day or in their pocket the next time they wear those pants. And you want to make sure that it represents you well. There's no line through the phone number and new one written in. And then make your goals before you go. We always do when it's an agenda for a board meeting, and we don't leave until we check them off. So make some goals for the conferences for women and for your everyday interactions, whether that be a couple of questions you want to ask somebody or two people you want to meet or just that, hey, I want to exercise my ability to start a conversation, so I'm going to have one new conversation today. Or maybe I'm going to exchange two business cards. Start there. And then lastly is the power of you. You know, we always know where we are because of GPS in our lives. But do we always know who we are? You know, we are going in so many different directions, which are wonderful directions. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we ask ourselves a couple of questions every week. Who am I? Why am I here? Is a magnificent quote from a vice presidential debate back in 92 by Admiral Stockdale, Ross Perot's running mate. He opened the vice presidential debate with that question, and it got a lot of laughs, but it is truly profound. We may ask ourselves that question and find out we are exactly who we want to be and where we need to be, or we may find out that, you know what, this is who I am, and I want to be this person, but you know what, this is not what I want to be doing, or maybe this isn't the relationship I want to be in. When we better know who we are, we better know what we have to give to ourselves, our families, community, industry, and beyond. So ask yourself that, and you'll be ready to go, because then it's showtime, and you want to show up on time because that early bird does get that worm. You want to be positive no matter how difficult your day might be, because when you're positive, people see you in a much more credible light. They want to be around you. They want to continue the conversation with you. And there are so many great tools you can use along the way at the conference and in your everyday, especially when it comes to listening. You know, Larry King once said, "I never learned anything while I was talking." And he's right. We learn when we listen. And at the conferences for women, you will have that chance to listen, to learn, to give back, to empower, and have the conversations, even if they're only a couple of minutes, that may change your life or someone else's. Because even though we might think our jobs are 9-to-5, our careers are 24/7, and we represent ourselves everywhere we are, every day. And that's something I'm proud of, because the women that especially want to be involved, that are listening to this teleclass today, want to empower each other while empowering themselves. And I think that is just incredible. And I'm thrilled to be a part of it. And Karen, you know, the conferences make such a difference in people's lives. And if we walk in to those conferences and to our meetings and to our events after work, knowing that we could change somebody's life, that we can truly eat, drink, and succeed, then we will.
Laura, this is just wonderful. I have been listening carefully, and I feel like I have learned so much. I want to just take a moment for a couple of questions that we've got. People are very interested. You know, a lot of people say that they feel overwhelmed before going into an event. And you talk about the need for research, for getting the power of knowledge, for setting your goals. What do you do in that moment right before the event starts where you might feel overwhelmed? How do you gather yourself and get present?
Yeah, very good question, Karen. Number one, as you can imagine, I say, Laura, it's showtime. And I take a deep breath, and I recall the research that I've done, because I find that when I'm prepared, I can be confident. And I am often a party of one. And even doing what I do, it can still be overwhelming when you're about to walk into this room. So I try to rely on my research. That brings me confidence, and I also rely on body language. I look for those conversations with maybe an odd number of people, 3 people or 5 people. I look to see if somebody in that conversation might even have a foot that's angling out of the circle, so to speak, which means, you know, they're open to other conversations. Maybe they're looking for other conversations. And so I approach approachable situations, and you start to read that. And it starts to become very natural. And, again, that all goes to confidence. And it may take a few minutes once you get into the room, but, man, after you've had that first conversation, you're thinking, okay, this is good. I can do this. And each time it will get a bit better, and you will be stronger, and you will help everybody else be stronger for themselves as well.
Great advice. And then a number of questions dealing with something you touched on, and that is the role that digital communications play in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they might interfere with networking. It is so hard for us to be present, and we feel the pull of our devices all the time. So you put it in your pocket, you put the code away. What else can you do to free your mind so that you are in the room with the people you're with?
I simply make sure I turn off and leave it somewhere else. Whether I'm checking my coat, I'm going to check my phone with it, but not my business cards. And or, like I said, you know, leaving it in the pocket, but it's right there. You want to go for it. But I tell you, the moment you're in conversation and you're focused on that person and you're listening to them, it's amazing how much less you're listening for your little ringer to go off or the next text to come in. And when it comes to social networking, it is an incredible tool, but I just do not feel that it is a substitute for face-to-face conversations. It helps us prepare. It helps us continue the conversation between in-person meetings or conversations on the phone or on Skype and so forth. But I just don't see it as the substitute. Connecting with somebody after an event, again, is phenomenal because it keeps that conversation going until next time. But I urge you to practice putting it down, whether that just be for 30 minutes and you go check it, fine. But it's going to start getting you into the practice, and that's positive.
Great. So, Laura Schwartz, thank you so much for your advice and your wonderful stories today. You can learn more from Laura in her book, Eat, Drink, and Succeed, Climb Your Way to the Top Using the Networking Power of Social Events. And we'll see you at the conferences.